BPR Podcast.
Good evening. My name is Jarrett Key, and I'm here again with Michael D'Ortenzio and Oliver Hudson. Today, we're focusing on, in our conversation, climate change. So I'm just going to start you all with a prompt. So Obama, a couple of days ago, in his State of the Union address, urged Congress to take action on greenhouse gas emissions. He said, if you don't do it, I'm going to do an executive order myself that involves probably cap and trade, some kind of cap and trade system. So why don't we start with you, Oliver? Just kind of give me your initial impressions about what the president had to say.
Sure. So first of all, thank you, Jared. Thank you, Michael. So the first thought I have about what the president said is whether this is constitutional. I'm not sure the president would really have the authority to issue an executive order, something to do with addressing climate change. It would probably be through the EPA, and the EPA, for a start, is an unconstitutional agency of government. There's no authority in the Constitution to create such an agency. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution that lays out Congress's powers clearly does not include any kind of provision for regulation of the environment. But the second point I think is worth making about this is that, to me, this is a repeat of the healthcare issue, in which we have a very weak economy and we're going to try and do something about climate change, just as we did something about healthcare, that'll have pretty negative effects on the economy in the long term, and maybe for some possible environmental benefit. But it seems like this would be one of the worst times to try and do something about climate change when we have very slow growth in the United States, and this would probably require standards for the kinds of appliances people can use in their homes. I know there was a bill in the past that didn't get through, but was about, you know, requiring what kind of light bulb people have. I mean, apart from being intrusive, it's not even clear that that would save all that much energy, and it would be a big cost to consumers. And on the whole, I think we're very much blowing the proportion, the problem of climate change out of proportion. Yes, it's true that a lot of computer models have shown that there could be significant sea level rises in the future, but a lot of people question whether those models are really all that valid. So there's this famous physicist, Freeman Dyson, who's gotten a lot of heat from the left for being critical of kind of the hoopla around global warming. He said that the idea that global warming is the most important problem of our time is nonsense. He said that we could probably deal with global warming in pretty easy to do ways with trees that can capture carbon. And so I don't think we should readily say that the entire scientific community is behind the fact that global warming is a serious problem or climate change.
Cool. Okay. Wow. So, Michael, could you please respond?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having us here again, and good to see you, Oliver, once more. So first, let me just address Oliver's argument when it comes to the Constitution. Now, first of all, I think that these arguments are, first of all, distracting. Second of all, not incredibly relevant. The EPA has been around for more than 30 years. It has done great work with the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act. I could make the same argument that, you know, the government is not entitled to regulate abortion. The federal government's, that's clearly not in the Constitution, gay marriage. I mean, there are plenty of issues. Now, obviously, those are social issues that the left is more empathetic to. But there are plenty of issues that the Constitution does not address that the federal government has had an impact on and has for many years. So I tend to reject those constitutional arguments as soon as someone makes them, because they're often not as egregious as I think people can make them out to be. Second of all, I also appreciate you calling it global warming, because I think that that really is the way to address it. And I think that you brought up a couple of good points. First of all, you mentioned this scientist who I'm not completely familiar with. But I think the overwhelming consensus of four scientists in this country and really around the world is that the Earth is warming and it's important to do something about it. I agree that it sometimes may be a little bit overblown. But I don't think that we should be sitting here saying, you know, we can take piecemeal steps, because I think it's something we really need to take action on. Now, you mentioned the light bulb bill. I happen to disagree. I think that's a great piece of public policy that really will motivate consumers to change habits that will have a positive effect on the environment. Now, there's an issue with mercury storage and recycling. You know, typical with public policies, it's only halfway thought out. So, you know, we've got a great idea putting light bulbs in people's homes that are more energy efficient, but then we don't really have a way to deal with the mercury in those bulbs afterwards. So, you know, I agree with that, but I do think that it's important to get consumers to move. And that's really my argument on the entirety of global warming. You know, no matter which way we look at it, whether humans are having a large impact, whether whether it's something that we need to move on right away, we know that the way that we treat our environment is not in a sustainable manner. And I come at it from a broader context. When we say that, you know, we look at what's happening to the Amazon, the deforestation, we look at the pollutants that exist in our society, we look at the carcinogens that we're allowed to inhale. And those are the types of things that I think require a broad conversation and broad action, because that requires change. So, you know, I understand that there are different arguments from different scientists as to the effects of global warming, the need for us to do something about it, et cetera, et cetera. I think we all have seen, just in our day-to-day lives, at least I have seen, living in New England, a clear warming trend. And that's obviously anecdotal, but I think most people would agree with that. And beyond that, I think there's a need for us to really treat the Earth, be better stewards for the Earth, and treat the Earth as a place where we live instead of where we own. And I think that sort of that's where I come at this argument. And that's why I think regulation and government intervention to change people's habits is important.
Cool. So I'm going to address something that Oliver said specifically about the focus of the environment and prioritizing the economy above the environment. And a lot of research that I've done personally, they say that focusing on the environment can create lots of jobs for the economy. So you look at places like Europe and China, who have had all these very large initiatives for the environment, and suddenly they've added 100,000 jobs to the private sector. So I just kind of want to hear a response from both of you about that.
I mean, I think Oliver may agree with me. I'm always skeptical of those green job numbers. I think they're a little bit, they tend to be overblown. You know, I think the stimulus did a lot of great work, right? But, you know, you hear that the stimulus created X number of jobs. Now, you know, a lot of those were jobs that, you know, you hear the analogy that they saved a job that was on the chopping block anyways, or they saved a job that hadn't been filled, or, you know, all those sorts of different things where it's like it can be a little bit overblown. So I don't see it as a jobs argument, because I think that, you know, if you move into this green economy, yes, it will create new jobs. I think you're also going to be losing jobs somewhere else. I'm not qualified to parse out the net balance in that. But I tend to think those are a little overblown. I don't know if Oliver would agree with
sure.
that.
Sure. So you can definitely create jobs, you know, creating programs from the government. But the question is whether in creating those jobs, you're actually limiting other jobs that might be created, or you're not allowing for the maximum possible number of productive jobs to exist. So I think that, yes, we can have government programs and create, you know, green jobs in various industries. But the private market doesn't want to develop these technologies right now, or at least they're not at the point where they want to sell them widely. And that tells me that these so-called technologies aren't advanced enough to be economically viable. And so it really doesn't make sense to push things that are more expensive than the market can really bear on consumers. It'll decrease their purchasing power. It'll make the economy on the whole less productive. And to go back to what Michael said about the facts of global warming, I think that if I call it global warming, it's because I've heard the word so much. I really mean to say climate change, because I don't think the Earth is really warming everywhere. I think some parts are warming a lot, some parts are kind of stagnant, and also the Earth has gone through various periods of climate change in its history, and so this isn't something that's totally new and will kind of destroy everything. But and the final thing is that I think that it's always nice to think of, you know, a bill through Congress that can get people to change their habits and be more energy efficient. But the point that always gets lost is, what's this actually going to cost people? If they have to put in more expensive appliances in their homes, they won't be spending as much money on other things. They won't be investing in other things. And are we willing to be a little bit better in treating the environment and give up some of the other investments we might make to develop other technologies or to have better schools or whatever? I think that it's at this point, given the doubt around climate change that some scientists have, it's not wise to put all these resources into climate change.
Well, I mean, if I could just, I mean, I think the doubt is overblown, quite frankly. And I think also, you know, I agree with you that It's something where, you know, we may not be totally clear, and government intervention has a tendency to decrease public private sector job growth, et cetera, but that's a very generalized sort of economic argument that I don't think really, I mean, it applies to every situation, no matter what part of government you're talking about. And I think, as with anything in politics, it's a value statement. And frankly, I think that this is a value, as I said, in that broader context of being stewards to the earth, that we need to take seriously and really, really teach ourselves to change. And, you know, I think government in many ways has been at the forefront of changes. You know, when we look at the civil rights movement, when we look at things like that, you know, there was a group of dedicated leaders that used the government as a conduit to catalyze change in a nation. And I think that, you know, that's something that we really need to do when it comes to climate change. And for me, that's a value I'm worth trading off a little bit for.
I think that definitely something that would help the climate change movement is if the people who were seen as the leaders of it were scientists and not politicians. Naturally, politicians are going to get more attention. But when I think of climate change, I think of basically Al Gore and maybe President Obama and some prominent Democrats in government. But though, I think the average person says, is this really just a political move or is there science behind this? And some of the science has been questionable because there was the whole incident in 2009 when there was the so-called ClimateGate scandal, when there were emails around this organization between famous scientists who were, you know, in one way or another kind of nudging the data a little bit to look like it was a more serious problem than it is. Not that suggests that the whole thing is bogus. I mean, there's always going to be a few reckless scientists. But I think the whole idea of politicians at the front of the movement really discredits the movement. I think of Al Gore. I don't know if this is still true, but at one time, Al Gore, his home in Tennessee, used more energy than any other home in the state of Tennessee.
Well, I mean, I don't think that's... what is that? That doesn't tell you anything about the climate change.
No, but I think people...
So Al Gore is, you know, lives well. I don't know how...
But, you know, I think there is a lot of hypocrisy about people
sure.
who are on the front about, we got to do something about, you know, climate change, it's going to destroy the world, and then it ends up they're enormous energy users. So I think that one thing that would really help a lot of people is if scientists were in the front of the movement, and that way more of the facts would get out.
Sure, and I agree with that. I mean, I think, first of all, ClimateGate, I don't think changed the overall consensus that global warming is occurring as a result of human activity, and really, irrespective of that, is something that needs to be addressed. And so, you know, I don't think ClimateGate changed that. And I don't want to get caught in these particular examples. You know, what I always think of is Strom Thurmond, the former, you know, longtime U.S. senator from South Carolina, who was an ardent segregationist. And, you know, we find out 2 years after his death that he fathered a child with a 16-year-old mate at the 1920s or 30s, whenever he was a young man. And so it's like, you know, I mean, talk about hypocrisy in some ways, right? And so, you know, I don't want to get distracted on individual examples because I think it's not totally relevant to the entire movement. And I don't think that climate change, although it did have an impact on some important research, I don't think it changed the overall direction of what scientists were thinking.
Cool. So we are going to stop there. And I look forward to talking with both of you next week.
Good to see you. Thanks
Great.
For having us.
Thank you.